You're listening to The Point. Spring is always a welcome time of year, but it also means we must be more vigilant about ticks and tick bites. We've long been aware of the risks of Lyme disease, but ticks in our region also host other pathogens, including anaplasmosis and babesiosis. Epidemiologists and biologists are also raising a red flag about the Lone Star tick that has migrated into our region. This tick also carries pathogens that can infect humans, and because they primarily feed on deer, the Lone Star tick could proliferate in regions with high concentrations of deer like Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard. Joining us to discuss ticks, the diseases associated with them, and ways we can prevent the transmission and spread of disease is Larry Dapsis, entomologist and tick project coordinator at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. Hi, Larry.
Good morning, Cindy. Great to be back with you.
Yep. Dick Johnson, Dukes County Tick Program Biologist. Hi, Dick.
Morning, Mindy.
All right, Larry, give us a sense of how ticks fit into the ecosystem on the Cape and Islands and why we have such high numbers here.
Well, actually, the populations fluctuate to a certain degree, but not hugely. I mean, it's the population of the ticks this year is based on the size of the acorn crop 2 years ago. So it's a complex ecosystem. What's happening now is that people have higher exposure risk because they're getting out of the house and trying to, you know, keep calm amid this pandemic. And so we know that that's happening based on the tick testing lab at UMass Amherst that I work closely with. And they are testing 3 times as many ticks per week compared to their 3-year average. So it's just a reflection. A lot of people getting outdoors, And since it's so mild, the ticks are quite active, and so they're intersecting.
Yeah, there's several species of ticks in our region. We have the dog tick, the black-legged tick, or people call the deer tick, and now the Lone Star tick. Dick, would you explain which ticks carry which diseases?
Okay, the one everybody knows, of course, is what we call the deer tick with Lyme disease, and that's really... When people think of ticks and disease, that's what they think of. What a lot of people don't realize is that they also carry anaplasmosis, they carry babesiosis. Some small percentage have deer tick fever, and I'm missing one. Ehrlichiosis is the fourth.
Well, there's relapsing fever, Borrelia miyamotoi, and Powassan virus.
Yeah, Powassan, I call deer tick fever, sort of the same thing. Yeah, and that's right, we forgot about miyamotoi. Okay, so anyway, there's at least 5 or 6 diseases that the deer ticks carry. The Lone Star ticks over here on the vineyard also carry both Rocky Mountain spotted fever and tularemia, but luckily they don't transmit those very often to humans. We see a very, very small percentage of people with tularemia and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. But what we're seeing on the vineyard is an increase in spotted fever, we think, which is a slightly different disease carried by the Lone Star ticks. It's the same Rickettsia bacteria, but we see much more of that than we do of Lyme disease now. And also we're seeing some tick bite tularemia, which we also believe is associated with the increase in Lone Star ticks, which are spreading across the island both geographically and in numbers.
Yeah. Now, Dick, you started seeing Lone Star ticks on the vineyard before we started seeing them here on the Cape and South Coast. Any idea how they got to the island? And you know, the numbers have been increasing every year quite a bit, right?
Yeah, the assumption is that they came up with birds. Although they're, as you noted, their primary host are deer, the young, the larvae, and the nymphs also feed on birds. I know there's some... The people who net birds over on Tuckernuck off of Nantucket say that, yeah, they see the Lone Star ticks on the birds that they catch in their nets. So there's no doubt about it. It's the ground-feeding birds. They're coming up. I thought it was seagulls because you usually see them on the beaches, Cape Pogue and in Aquinnah, places like that first. But no, they tell me it's the passerines, the ground-feeding birds like sparrows, towhees, catbirds, things like that.
And, Larry, we're seeing them numbers increase on the Cape now, right?
Sure. The initial beachhead was established in Sandy Neck Beach Park 9 years ago. And now we're finding established populations in other parts of the Cape. And what The scenario that we believe occurred is that they were introduced to Sandy Neck by migratory birds. Pretty easy to think about them stopping off in one of the islands, picking up some Lone Star ticks, stopping off in Sandy Neck. They drop off, lay some eggs, and bang, off we go. Mm. But we have really good evidence that there are animals on the ground that are moving these things around, coyotes and our friend the wild turkey. And there's a very close association of Lone Star tick and wild turkeys. In fact, when they were first describing the Lone Star tick, they almost named it the turkey tick because that is a preferred host.
Wow. Dick, how is data collected on the number and distribution of the Lone Star ticks in the vineyard?
My primary role is education, and I work directly with landowners. And what I do is I go to people's houses. I do a survey of the tick habitat. We've gotten pretty good at recognizing what factors around people's yards are related to the ticks. And then I actually go out and drag for the ticks. We have a very high-tech method with basically a white towel on a broomstick. And I drag that around the edge of the yard and see what I find. And we use that as a measure. And then the Martha's Vineyard Commission maps that onto their GIS system, and you can kind of see the ticks showing up new places on the island every year. They're a little further away. Originally, they were mostly in Aquinnah and out on Chappaquiddick on Cape Pogue. Now they're every place on Chappaquiddick, every place I go in Aquinnah, and a good portion of Chilmark. And I see one of the first ones in Oak Bluffs last year.
Yeah, and they're a little bit different than the deer ticks in the... They can see, right? I mean, the deer ticks kind of sit there and wait for you, but the Lone Star ticks can see you and can come your way, right?
They will come after you. It's not clear how much of that is visual. They do have rudimentary eyes that will react to dark and light. But also, I think most people agree, they're reacting very strongly to carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. They've shown that after a mammal walks by, they can... 5 minutes later, they can still sense that tiny, tiny amount of carbon dioxide. In fact, one of the ways people trap them is to use dry ice, which is frozen carbon dioxide, and you put that out, and the ticks will come to that.
Larry, you want to say anything about that?
They're not an ambush predator like deer ticks, so they will come after you, and they respond to motion and odors like carbon dioxide. But one of the points I make with people about Lone Star tick, there's three different pathogens we know they can transmit. We've found only one, a pathogen that causes a disease called STARI, Southern Tick Associated Rash Disease, and we've had cases of that on Cape Cod. But the other two, Ehrlichiosis and I forget what the third one is off the top of my head, tularemia, I think. But the real game changer on Lone Star tick is that the bite of a Lone Star tick can trigger an allergy to red meat consumption, which can be as mild as hives, but range all the way to anaphylactic shock. And we have had cases of that red meat allergy on the Cape.
Yeah. And sometimes you overcome that and sometimes not, right?
It needs a lot more research. It seems that there's a recovery over time, but nobody really knows how to define what that recovery curve might look like, and nobody knows what happens next time you get bitten by a Lone Star tick. Does it come back with a vengeance? So a lot of research needs to be done.
Yeah. All right. So, Larry, what's the life cycle of ticks, and are they able to infect us at all life stages? Maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
Well, if we focus on the deer tick, which is the front and center tick that we have, the ticks lay the eggs in the spring, and then those eggs hatch into larvae in late summer, July into August, and they are tiny, tiny, tiny. And the silver lining is that the larvae are clean. They are not infected. So when they take their first blood meal, which typically would be a small animal host like a mouse or a chipmunk, that's their opportunity to become infected. So once the larvae get a blood meal, they develop into the nymph stage, and then they hunker down for the winter and emerge the following spring, typically mid to late May, but we're anticipating that more likely they're going to show up the end of April. So we find that on average, 1 in 5, 20% of them are infected with the Lyme disease bacteria. And so during the summer, that stage, you know, they're the size of a poppy seed, so it's more likely to elude a tick check. So that stage is responsible for 85% of all tick-borne diseases. So when a nymph stage tick gets a blood meal, it will become an adult stage tick that will activate starting mid-September, but by mid-October, they're really rocking. And they'll be with us until the following spring. So anytime you get temperatures above freezing and a break in snow cover, you're going to have those things out there ready to ambush you.
Yeah. And then what about the Lone Star tick? What's the life stage of a Lone Star tick?
Similar. The eggs hatch out in late summer. And the significance of that is that the larvae are very aggressive. So when those eggs hatch out, you end up with a very high concentration of these larval ticks. And if you bump into one, generally you're going to meet a lot of them. And you can get 200 or 300 bites within a matter of minutes around your ankles. And those bites will burn and itch for weeks. I've talked to people who have had this happen to them, and it's a horrible situation. So even with treating it with things like cortisone to knock the swelling down. So then similarly, they develop into nymph stage ticks that will come out, you know, the following spring, and then the adults appear during the summer months. So slightly different timing on those. Yeah. And dog ticks we consider mostly to be an annoyance, even though they can vector Rocky Mountain and tularemia, but we really, those diseases are very rare this far north.
Yeah. So, Dick, we had a very mild winter. And as Larry was saying, when we get some, you know, warmer temperatures, even the winter, the ticks can become active. I think people have this feeling that that their ticks are gone in the winter. So looking over this winter, what were you seeing? I mean, are you seeing ticks now?
And I actually don't do any field work in the winter, even though I know the ticks are out. They're rare enough. But, yes, I started about 10 days ago, started getting a lot of tick calls. The deer ticks, which, as Larry noted, have been active all winter, are really stepping up now. The adults are really out. I'm getting many calls. I picked one off my wife's back. My daughter's had one. So there's a lot of deer ticks out right now. And we're also seeing the Lone Star, the adult Lone Star is out already. I got a report from somebody and went out last Saturday and found quite a few adult Lone Star ticks. In some places, there's a lot of places now they're as common as the deer ticks. I find more Lone Star than I do deer ticks. We've kind of flipped on the vineyard now where in many spots the Lone Star is the most common tick that we find.
So
that's interesting because that's the situation in Long Island. They're seeing is that Lone Star is now a bigger deal than deer ticks.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Dick, I was going to ask you about that. So are the deer tick populations decreasing, or is it just, you know, that there's that many more Lone Star ticks now that it's their equal? I mean, what's happening there?
I've been asking Sam Telford that for a number of years, and we're not really sure. In fact, he said in some places on Long Island he finds 10 Lone Star ticks for every deer tick. My impression here on the vineyard so far is that the deer tick populations are holding fairly steady. I don't, you know, they fluctuate so much year to year, it's hard to say, but I don't see any dramatic decrease. And what I'm seeing is just huge increase in number of Lone Star ticks. We can find hundreds of Lone Star nymphs in some places. It's not unusual at all to find 50, 70, 100 Lone Star nymphs on one property, which is much more than you would find of deer ticks.
Mindy, one of the reasons for this is that there's somewhat different host preferences with deer ticks versus Lone Star ticks. Deer ticks rely upon small rodent hosts as a major part of their life cycles for the larval and nymphal stage, so white-footed mice and chipmunks and squirrels. Lone Star ticks, they prefer larger hosts, so things like rabbits, turkeys, as I indicated, coyotes. So there's slightly different host preferences. So that's going to, the populations aren't going to outcompete each other, I don't believe. So we're going to have both of them.
Oh, lucky us. But Larry, why are ticks such good hosts for these diseases? Do we know that?
There are competent hosts for these pathogens, like mice and chipmunks are spectacular at this, as are turkeys. So there's some birds that are reservoir hosts. And there's a bunch of animals that aren't competent. They cannot infect ticks. So deer can't, raccoons don't, coyotes don't. So there's a lot of animals that don't infect the ticks, but they do supply a blood meal and help sustain those populations. But what we've done over time, Cindy, is land use management patterns are really responsible for the pickle we're in. We've been cutting down forests for many years, but in creating suburban neighborhoods, we've fragmented those forests into smaller sized islands, so to speak. So at some point, you start reducing biological diversity. And one of the consequences of this island effect is you start eliminating your top-tier predators, like fox. They are the most efficient predators of things like mice and chipmunks. So without the fox, we've just given the entire landscape to the infective reservoir hosts like mice and chipmunks. So we kind of did this to ourselves.
You're listening to The Point. We're talking about ticks and the diseases associated with them with Larry Dapsis, entomologist and tick project coordinator at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, and Dick Johnson, Dukes County Tick Program Biologist. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, according to the CDC, Lyme disease is the most commonly reported vector-borne illness in the United States, yet we don't have a vaccine for humans. We can vaccinate our pets against Lyme. Larry, I don't know if you know the answer to this. Are we getting closer to having a human vaccine for Lyme?
Yeah, it's ironic that there's a vaccine for your pooch and not for humans. There was a vaccine for people, but it was withdrawn from the market. And there are two versions of why the pharmaceutical withdrew it. One was that they didn't feel like they were going to make enough money. But the other is that it seemed that it was making some people sick. So that vaccine is still out there and available. And to my knowledge, it is effective, but nobody's going to touch it. My understanding, there is a pharmaceutical that has a candidate vaccine in phase two clinical trials. So we might be looking at several years down the road. But one of the things I point out to people is you can't completely vaccinate your way out of this problem, because we have, with deer ticks, five different pathogens that we know of. And babesiosis and anaplasmosis are on the increase, and we have a highly susceptible demographic on the Cape in that those two diseases, 95% of them are found in people age 60 and above. And we have a lot of older people that live on the Cape.
Yeah, and you can sometimes have more that you can get Lyme and, say, babesiosis at the same time. Dick, I think, didn't that happen to you?
No, luckily I've only had Lyme, and that was before I started doing the ticks. I would like to add on that just what Larry said. It's interesting that on the vineyard last year we only had one confirmed case of Lyme disease, and we had more cases of anaplasmosis and babesiosis and spotted fever than we have of Lyme disease. It's the other diseases now that are, people have gotten pretty smart about Lyme disease. They're getting to the doctor, and they're not really developing the full-blown disease. And yet at the same time, we're seeing an increase of all these other diseases. We had more tularemia than we had of Lyme disease.
And now, if you find a tick on yourself, you can send it to UMass to be tested for a wide range of pathogens. Are they still offering this service during the pandemic, do we know?
Yes.
Okay.
In fact, it's now being subsidized by Department of Public Health for the entire state, not just Cape Cod, where we originally arranged a discount. So right now, to get a tick tested, $15. Go to tickreport.com, And the benefit of that is that now you are in possession of hard data of what you were potentially exposed to. And unlike human blood tests for Lyme, this analysis is 99.9% accurate. And one of the things I continuously point out to people and the medical community is we see a certain degree of co-infection, meaning ticks can be packing two, three, sometimes even four different pathogens, and you can get more than one of these diseases at the same time.
Yeah. So also, I've done this myself, and we'll put a link to the for more information about the tick report at our website, capeandislands.org. But just having the satisfaction of knowing, whew, that tick was negative. You know, I mean, you worry about that when you, especially when you take a deer tick off like one of your kids or something. It's like, oh my gosh, absolutely. You know? Yeah.
That's peace of mind. Absolutely peace of mind.
Yeah. We have an email from Sarah who says, hi, Dick, tell us about peppermint mint. Will planting that deter ticks?
It seems I haven't seen any good evidence, only anecdotal, but it appears that the ticks don't like smelly things like peppermint. We have to be careful when we're out dragging we avoid peppermint plants, because if we get the peppermint on our flags, it seems like we don't pick up as many ticks. We've had it happen a couple times where I couldn't understand where one of my interns wasn't getting ticks. Like, what are you doing wrong? And then I realized he had dragged over the peppermint. That was very interesting. Oh. So I don't think it's the answer, but I don't think it can hurt either. I think it will keep them away from, I do think it, they won't live in the peppermint. It may keep them away from, you know, the areas of your house where it's planted.
Yeah. Now, is that the Lone Star and the deer ticks, or just one of them?
I don't really know. At the time, we were finding deer ticks.
Deer ticks, I got you.
This is really based on just a couple of experiences. No research, just anecdotal, noticing that if we drag through the peppermint, we don't seem to get the ticks. And so people have
So, Dick, what questions do you still have about Lone Star ticks that would help inform your work to reduce the numbers on the vineyard?
The biggest thing for me is noting exactly what hosts they're feeding on and when. You know, a lot of the hosts, the ticks aren't active during the hunting season. For example, we know they feed on deer, but they're feeding on the deer before the hunting season. We don't ever find ticks on deer that are brought in from the hunting, brought into the check-in station like we do the Lyme disease ticks, the deer ticks. I'd like to know the role the turkeys play. I'd certainly like to know about skunks and rabbits. Larry noted all the changes we made to the habitat on the vineyard. We've also brought in a whole bunch of animals, and many of the animals that the Lone Star ticks are feeding on seem to be the animals we've introduced, chipmunks and squirrels for the deer ticks, but turkeys, skunks, the eastern cottontail rabbit, which is different than the rabbit that was originally here. It's much more around people's houses than the native New England cottontail. So we've really done this to ourselves, raccoons. And that's all been the changes in the environment in the last 50 years. We've brought in all these animals that appears that the deer ticks, the Lone Star ticks are feeding on. So I'd like to know that. Yeah. Still trying to figure out the habitat. We don't know exactly. They seem to be more of a generalist than the deer ticks. I find Lone Star ticks in all types of habitats, in grasslands. They seem to like pitch pine woods a lot, which is bad news for much of the vineyard.
I haven't heard anybody mention rats. Do we see ticks on rats?
I'm sure that deer ticks feed on rats. So they've been reported from other places. I've never looked at the rats on the vineyard.
Rats are a competent host for the Lyme disease bacteria.
Yeah, because there's a lot of rats on the Cape. All right, Susan sent us a note. She says, what is the best way to remove a tick so I can send it for testing? Larry, that's a question for you.
Pointy tweezers. We take all the myths, old wives' tales things, take those off the table. It's not the dish detergent or the Vaseline or the flaming match. I mean, then you're destroying evidence. But it's pointy tweezers. There is a myth out there that if you use blunt tweezers and crush the tick, you're going to mainline Lyme bacteria and other things into you. But tick plumbing doesn't work like that. if you rupture the tick, you just might get a nasty infection at the point of attachment. So with the pointy tweezers, you just grab that tick by the head as close to your skin as you can get and gently pry straight up. Now, if you see something that's left behind, don't panic. And people do. I mean, it's 911 call Larry. The head's embedded in it. It's just that beak of a mouth part, so it's no worse than a wood splinter. Just hit it with a little Neosporin, and it'll dissolve. Now, we have videos that I scripted and produced several years ago that was funded by Cape Cod Healthcare, and one of them includes tick removal and how to get a tick tested and some other things. So if you go to our website, capecodextension.org/ticks, there's 90 minutes of material in 10 little buckets.
Yeah, that's good to know. We'll put a link to that on our website as well. Susan, good luck with that. And we have a lot of companies advertising around the region that they can treat properties to reduce ticks and mosquitoes, for that matter. What do we know about this treatment? Is it safe for the environment? Is it safe for people?
It's I recommend it as a 1-2 punch. The primary tactic for protection is permethrin-treated clothing and footwear. Hands down, everybody should be doing that. For the Perimeter Yard Spray, that's a way to further reduce exposure risk. But buyer, beware. There are some companies that are offering an all-natural product, primarily rosemary oil. Those botanical-based products are completely ineffective. The gold standard is a product called Talstar, which contains bifenthrin, which is kind of like permethrin. And for this particular application, these perimeter sprays are a spot treatment. And chemically speaking, once bifenthrin hits leaf litter and soil particles, it's completely immobilized. So it's not going to leach into the groundwater. It's not going to wash off site. It's going to be broken down by soil microbes in about 3 to 4 weeks. So the product chemistry is quite compatible with the application that we are looking at. So it's not Rachel Carson's Silent Spring sort of scenario.
So if we're spraying this stuff and it's killing ticks, isn't it killing other maybe beneficial bugs too?
There are things in leaf litter like springtails and other, you know, Mother Nature's recycling committee. And you get short-term knockdown of creatures like springtails, but those things multiply so fast, they recolonize those areas very quickly. So it's not, you're not permanently scarring the ecosystem.
And what about pollinators?
Well, you never spray anything during bloom, but in my experience, I never see bees foraging in leaf litter. So it can be used quite safely, I think.
Yeah. I guess the reason I'm asking that is I have seen one of my neighbors has had a service, and in the summer when things, it's the afternoon and they're out there spraying in the yard, and I'm thinking they're spraying more than leaf litter.
Yeah.
So I guess you might want to check out the...
Very, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Dick.
It's very important to see what the person is, what the company is doing. There are some real cowboys out there, and there's some people who are very careful. One thing I've been trying to emphasize is that if you're just concerned about ticks, make sure they're not also spraying for mosquitoes, because when they spray for mosquitoes, they're going to be spraying up in the trees and up in the air, and I think that's when you're much more likely to harm the pollinators and things that are flying around. If you're just doing ticks, you're doing a very narrow band around the edge of your property and around your house, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 foot wide. It's a very, as Larry said, a spot application. It's very precise where it should be done and how it should be done.
People should not be spraying for mosquitoes. That's ridiculous waste of money. It's not efficacious. You manage mosquitoes locally by managing standing water. Gabby Sikorsky from Mosquito Control would tell you that explicitly. A spray is not the way to go.
Right.
They do it all the time, unfortunately.
They do it all the time, yeah.
What I'm trying to get people not to do is don't spray, do not allow them to spray permethrin for mosquitoes around your yard. You can really minimize the impact if you just do the leaf litter.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and for that matter, I mean, some people have a lot of, you know, their perimeter of their yard is not something you can clean up. But for those of us who can, just cleaning up that leaf litter out of your yard is going to do is going to be good, right?
Number one thing you can do to make your yard safer. So first thing I talk to people about is this time of year now, get rid of the leaf litter. Should have been done in March, but you could still do it in April until the nymphs come out, because the adults aren't in the leaf litter, only the nymphs and the larvae. Right. So yeah, the best thing you can do, and that's in my studies, I've also done some statistical analyses to see what it is that predicts the presence of the deer ticks. And the first thing is the soil moisture. They need wetter areas, or at least not totally dry. And then the second thing is the amount of leaf litter and pine needles. That's the best. That's the best predictor for finding deer ticks on a property.
Right. Got about a minute left, Larry. Final thoughts?
Protect yourself, protect your yard, and protect your pets. It's a three-phase protection plan you have to consider. And I'm available as a resource anytime.
All right. And I do have one other email here, and this is from Megan. She says, if you're covering tick prevention, I live in Barnstable and created a light-colored tick guard that easily goes over your shoe or leg that you can see the ticks when they get on you. And she also says you can treat it with permethrin or your choice of repellent for extra protection. So thanks for this. Lots of things out there that we can look at as far as, permethrin-treated socks and pants. And you can even just buy the permethrin spray and spray your shoes and socks and things like that. So we will post more information about tick bite prevention and how to get a tick tested for pathogens at our website, capeandislands.org. Dick Johnson, Dukes County Tick Program Biologist, and Larry Dapsis, Entomologist and Tick Project Coordinator at Cape Cod Cooperative Extension. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks, Mindy.
Thanks, Mindy.
Yeah. I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.